I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. I'm reporting today from London, England, and I'm here with a nationalist from the nation of Lithuania who assures me that no matter how hard I try to pronounce his name, I will never get it right without an accent. So I'm just going to let him introduce himself to you. So take it away.
Hello, I'm Mindaugas Sidaravičius. I'm from Lithuania, and I'm running for the most vulgar nationalist of our country.
Well, welcome to the show. It's
Thank
great
you.
To have you. So let me get a little bit of background on you. You are how old, where are you from, and so forth?
I'm 22. I'm from Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. I was born there and raised there.
And how did you get involved in the Lithuanian nationalist movement? And can you tell us a little bit about its size, the players, the issues, and so forth?
Okay, one question per time. Okay.
So
how did I got involved? Well, at first it was a matter of political youth forming, because until age of 16, I was like anti-globalist, pro-Russian, some stuff like that. It was it's not a very good ideology to have, not very smart one. But later my political views started to form, and I saw nationalism as an answer. And I joined the movement when I was invited to an organization by my former friend, also a former member of that organization of which I'm in charge of now. Mm-hmm. So I was just invited, and I joined because at that time I was almost 18 or already 18 years old, and no one in my from all the people I know spoke the language he spoke. I mean, the words he used, all the those words like were political. It's not he used political vocabulary, and I just wanted to speak with someone or be with some people with whom I could talk about political issues, because all the general mass, doesn't matter if friends or just people, you know, they are illiterate on this issue, on political issue, and they don't want to get literate, and they don't want to hear you talk about serious problems. Doesn't matter, it's a global warming. For example, I'm not saying I'm very into that stuff, but food poisoning or ideological issues about minorities, doesn't matter. People don't want to hear you, and you have no one to talk about. So I just heard a person of my age talking some smart words, and I joined I went to the organization.
What's the name of the organization?
Lithuanian Nationalist Youth Union.
Okay. So how big is that organization, and how big is nationalism in general in Lithuania?
Organization, this is NGO, a youth organization.
Yeah.
We have only up to 200 members.
And that's in a country of how many?
2.9 million people.
And how many of those 2.9 million are ethnically Lithuanian?
Well, we have about 19% minorities, so
okay.
You can count.
Right, okay. So there are a good 2 million Lithuanians close to that?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Okay. And how important is nationalism in Lithuanian politics today?
No, I'm not saying it is important. I can say signals from opponents that they are actually afraid of nationalism, giving a rise in Lithuania. But current moment, it's not very like important, how you say, or it's not very powerful, because we also have a nationalist party which consists of 2,000 members, but that doesn't make any change until we will get elected.
Right. So was nationalist sentiment important in Lithuania when communism fell 25 years ago?
Yeah, it was definite. And after that, it wasn't.
Right.
Like, if you heard my speech yesterday, I told that after getting independence, after the fall of Soviet Union, after living through all this stuff, Nationalist Party was getting less and less and less votes in elections, until it got about, I don't want to lie, but about a quarter of 1%. Got in parliamentary elections, it just quarter of 1%. So that's how it works in Lithuania. It wasn't important.
Right. So who are the leading parties in Lithuania? What is the Lithuanian political mainstream belief? And why is that problematic from a nationalist perspective?
Mm. Why is that problematic? I will first answer this question. Because doesn't matter how they are calling themselves, liberals, conservatives, social democrats, they are all leading us to the same direction, to the utopia of cultural Marxism.
Okay.
Yeah, so conservatives in Lithuania are truly conservatives. And mainstream parties, we have ideological parties, and we have parties made as private enterprises.
Okay.
Yeah, so main parties are Social Democrats. Currently they're ruling. In opposition we have conservatives, and we have liberals also. Mayor of Vilnius is from Liberal Party, and we have two more parties I want to mention, which are private, like private enterprises. First one is the Party of Labor, but it's losing popularity, as I noticed. But it's like it can still be in a political spectrum. We still have members of parliament of that Labor Party, so it's like a private enterprise. And second party is Order and Justice, which describes itself more as a traditionalist. Representative of their party and also a chairman, Rolandas Paksas, he voted against Lithuania accepting euro and so on and so on. But the problem is they're just doing it to gain votes. They're like riding on this traditionalist horse.
Right.
Yeah. Because they have a lot of members who are who are dealing with corruption. They're bringing illegal cigarettes, for example, from Belarus or from Russia. They have this kind of person in their party. Who is like local mafia lord or something.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the problem. They are like taking our voters, but they don't honestly believe in that idea.
Right.
Yeah. So because they're just shifting according they're shifting their political views according to what the situation. They weren't traditionalists all the way their party existed.
Right.
Yeah, so that's like I mentioned, five main parties. Of course, we have Greens, we have also other party, but they're not like worth mentioning. They're not big enough.
Right. So what are the main ethnic minorities in Lithuania?
Polish and Russian.
And about what percentage of the population are they?
That 19% which I mentioned to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make almost that, like maybe 14%, 7% Polish, 7% Russian. That's about that. I don't remember correctly, but that's they make most of that 19%.
Okay. Okay. And are there tensions? Are there issues?
Yeah.
What are the sorts of issues?
Polish issue. They want the rights which no one has in Europe. For example, they want their kids to pass easier graduation exams, Lithuanian language exam. You have to pass a Lithuanian language state exam if you want to get into university.
Right.
Yeah. If you want to go free to the university, or either if you don't pass state's exam, just school's exam, you can't go into university in Lithuania.
Mm-hmm.
So they want this, and they are having this easier exam now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and Lithuanians who live in Poland, they don't have easier Polish exam for them.
So how many Lithuanians live in Poland?
We have I can't say the number, but we have our own minority there. Not big, but in historical regions like Punskas, we have our own minorities. But the problem is that the Lithuanian schools in those regions are closing because we're not getting enough support, neither from Polish, neither from Lithuanian government. Yeah, and Polish schools in Lithuania, they are getting support of Polish government also.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the tensions. They want rights which no one has in Europe. If you are a member, if you are a citizen of any state, you have to know its language, you have to pass state's exam to go to university.
Right.
They're saying that we're oppressing them by not letting, we will oppress them if we won't let them take easier exam.
Right, right.
Okay, next issue is Polish. They formed their own political party, the leader of which is Tomaszewski. His surname is Tomaszewski. And we nationalists, told to the public that Tomaszewski is pro-Russian, he is not Polish, it's pro-Russian party. And no one believed us until recently about a year ago or 2 years ago on a day of victory, you know, May 9th, Russian day of victory of World War II.
Right.
Yeah. On day of the victory, he put on his sleeve a stripe of Saint George.
Okay.
You know those stripes, which we call them a colorad.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and even Polish government was mad at him, like, what the fuck is he doing?
Right.
So now everyone knows that he's pro-Russian, and he took under his wing all the Polish. Even though Polish in Lithuania don't speak the same Polish, what Polish you can hear in when you go to Poland.
Right.
It's a mix of Polish, Russian, Belarusian. We call it Tutej. It means this language from this region.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So about Russians, and then return to the Polish, because it's a very complex issue. We have some regions like Vilnius where a lot of people are Polish, so municipal in municipalities and municipal councils we have Polish, in some mm-hmm. we have Polish people, and for example like Klaipeda our city where is the seashore, so okay. near the Baltic Sea. So in Klaipeda we have Russians, for okay. example, elected to the city councils and so on, even sometimes to the parliament. So they had like the Russian party, and Tomaszewski, that leader of the Polish party, took that Russian party under his wing. Like mm-hmm. they merge. It's now not a elections campaign of Polish people. It was the name of the party. It's now called more like a block of Tomaszewski.
Okay.
So he took them under his wing, and how can you be a Polish right defender? Right.
Yeah.
Defender, if you are taking Russians also, and Russians, man, they were the pro Putin from the very beginning.
Right.
Yeah, so.
So why do you have Russians in Lithuania?
They were brought to us.
Okay, under the USSR.
Yeah, they were brought to us. Some of them left, some of them didn't. But they still live in Lithuania, although we call it the fascist countries. And, well, it's like pro-Russians tend to call Lithuania a fascist country. It's a Putin's propaganda thing.
Right.
If you are at least a conservative or a nationalist, or you don't let any privileges to the minorities, then you are a fascist. So
that's sort of the way that leftists use the word fascist in America, then. Basically,
yeah,
anybody to the right.
But it's an old thing in Eastern Europe. A lot of liberals who use that word, or leftists who use that word in Lithuania, they don't want to remember that it was all there from the very beginning. It was Soviet propaganda who called us fascists. Our forest brothers were fascists, bourgeois nationalists, and so on. So,
right.
Yeah, so they don't want to accept that they adopted their vocabulary from totalitarian state.
Right. So, who are the Forrest brothers? You mentioned the Forrest brothers.
Yeah, but let's finish with the Russians. So, the main tension is that if we weren't being NATO, like it, we are not, Putin could always come to Lithuania and say, I need to defend the Russians in Lithuania.
Right.
Yeah, so their main problem is they are disloyal to the state, to the country.
Right.
They are all white, so it wouldn't be a problem with even an organization. We have some assimilated Lithuanians or Polish, which are great people, and we have no discrimination towards them.
Right.
Because we're the same race, and if you accept yourself as a Lithuanian, if you are raised as a Lithuanian, then there's nothing wrong with that. Doesn't matter what kind of blood you have. So, but that kind of, we don't have that kind of people very much. We mostly have disloyal minorities who celebrate Victory Day of the against fascism, where a lot of they are saying that our grandfathers were fighting there, and half of the population, half of the people who are saying it, they are lying and don't know
right.
anything about history. Okay, so let's return to the Forrest brothers. They were partisans, guerrilla fighters after the Soviet occupation. It was a armed resistance
mm-hmm.
in Lithuania. Why we call them Forest Brothers? Because they were living in a forest. They built bunkers there. At first, the Soviet Union had a very... it was a big deal at first for Soviet Union. They didn't expect that big of a resistance
right
after the occupation.
This was in 1940?
It was after the World War, Second World War finished.
Okay.
Well, we were like in the middle, occupied by Russians, occupied by Germans during the World War II.
Yeah.
So we were like the front line kind of.
Yeah.
So yeah, after the Russians won against Germans, the resistance movement started. Some of them crossed the borders, went to other countries, to Western countries, to train themselves, return to Lithuania to train their comrades, but of course illegally. They crossed the borders illegally. So there's not much to tell, or there is a lot to tell about, like, we had many brilliant personalities who laid their head fighting for Lithuania. So it was like for our population, Soviet occupation was a very, very big damage to our genetics, I would think.
Right.
Because a lot of best people died. We were sent thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, currently I don't remember correct, were sent to gulags.
Right.
A lot of them died. And you know why they were sent to gulags? Because they were helpers of fascists.
Right.
Or bandits, and by fascists and bandits, Soviet Union meant partisans,
right,
Forest Brothers. So if you had any connection to, in your family, or maybe even in your kin,
mm-hmm,
to those who are leading some resistance or helping Forest Brothers, you were like, fuck.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why I say it was a big shock for our for the genetics of Lithuanians, because some of the best men, a lot of best men, died in the forest fighting, and a lot of best men and women died in gulags,
right,
or were crippled, or some returned. I recently met one. He's 81-year-old guy, cool guy, good political, righteous political views.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of them, like.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a short version.
Right. So, Lithuania belongs to the European Union and it belongs to NATO.
Yes.
When did that happen, and what is the rationale for that, and what do Lithuanian nationalists think about NATO and the EU?
Well, it happened in 2004.
Okay. Both. Okay.
What do we sometimes silently think about NATO? Well, in this geopolitical context, when we have that Slavic Mongol bear near our borders, it's good to be in NATO. What can I say? Of course, I understand why a lot of Western nationalists don't like NATO, and I also can relate to them. I understand that. But it's a difficult geopolitical situation. We are a small nation. We just few months ago we just went back to obligatory serving in the military.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have that. Everything was voluntary. So we don't spend 2% of our budget for the army as NATO requires.
Mm-hmm.
So we like can't defend ourselves by our own. But yeah, we also don't like NATO for the same things which other Western nationals don't like NATO. Well, you know, all the bringings of democracy.
Right, right.
Yeah, exactly. It hates me that it irritates me that I have to choose one lesser evil from the two.
Right.
So lesser evil is being in NATO. And Europe, sometimes people mix up European Union and NATO.
Right.
So like, if you're against European Union or you're criticizing it, you're a pro-Russian, and they say it like in Finland. But it's not the same.
Right.
NATO is totally like owned by USA, I could say.
Right.
So, and it has almost no pro-Russian intentions. Maybe they have their own agenda and so on, but they totally are not pro-Russian. And European Union, we have a lot. Political spectrum in European Union and European Parliament varies. They are pro-Russians, just leftists, liberals, and so on and so on. So, being in NATO makes us more safer. Being in European Union, well, it is good sometimes, but in general, it's totalitarian. Accept refugees, get euro, it's turning to federal state.
Right.
So in general, it's bad. There are two ways for you. In which ways I wanted, what I or Lithuanian nationalists want to see European Union. First way is for nationalists to take over the same European Parliament.
Right.
Like to get elected and to take over it, to change the course of European Union, return to sovereign states who can decide their inner policy, what they are doing for themselves. And this would be better, because every crisis can bring war or something, or a chance for Russia to express itself. So I would want it that way. But still, other way is just fuck it.
Like, right.
It should just fall, because if it continues its leftist and cultural Marxist agenda, it should just fall.
Right. I talked to a Polish nationalist politician a year ago here in London, and basically he said the Polish nationalists who want to stay in NATO and get out of the EU. They want to stay in NATO because they're afraid of Russia, and they want out of the EU because they don't want to have their internal policies dictated by bureaucrats in Brussels. So it seems like a sensible thing. The best solution for me would be to throw the United States out of NATO. You know, and for Europe to just have its own army and defense pact, you know, to keep its independence from both the U.S. and the Russians, the former USSR, that would be a sensible thing.
That would be a greatest thing for Europe to govern itself.
Yeah.
But it's to build that, we need a few decades at least, and we need to start now.
Right, right. Are you optimistic about nationalism in Lithuania and Europe more broadly?
Depends on where. Well, there are few scenarios. One scenario is that this nationalist boom in the European Union will just end, and everything will return to faggotry politics.
Right.
And second version is that it will rise more in every country. Chauvinistic agendas will take place. For example, if Polish will be chauvinistic towards some, not every, towards Ukrainians, towards Lithuanians, and so on. So if we have a rise of nationalism in Europe and we don't get rid of the chauvinism, we don't accept a nation's right to live in its God-given land, then we'll have war. So it's right. The second scenario. I would love to have a third scenario. It's like we accept every nation's sovereignty, and we just destroy cultural Marxism together.
Right.
Like all the white European nations just destroy completely.
Right.
From the politicians to the NGOs and so on.
Yeah. One of the things that was really revealing to me talking to these Polish nationalists last year is they gave me an overview of the ethnic mess in Eastern Europe, largely left over from Stalin's time. He said that there are Polish nationals in Belarus and Lithuania. There are ethnic Hungarians in Slovakia, Serbia, Romania, and Ukraine. There are all kinds of quarrels, therefore. There's all kinds of upsets because of the borders being drawn the way that they've been drawn. And he sort of despairs over that because what he'd like to see is he'd like to see the different European nationalist groups working together for Europe's greater interests. But then as soon as you get European nationalists in Eastern Europe, like the Jobbik party, a lot of the people in Jobbik are more angry about Slovakia and Romania than they are about the United States interfering in their policies, or Russia, and they're more concerned about white minorities than they are about Jews and Gypsies in their own country. And, you know, it's perilous. There's the petty nationalist chauvinism, which could lead to war between European states, and then there's a possibility of people cooperating. And I know that you travel a lot around Europe.
Not a lot, but I try a little. I got to know Swedish, little on the Swedish nationalists, very close with Latvian and Estonian nationalists. I made friends in Ukraine, so British people came to our independence celebration this year. So I try to travel more and find more people to cooperate with, for example, Polish.
Right.
I would like to find a Polish non-chauvinistic organization and cooperate with them because, like, if we fight with each other, so Poland and Lithuania, which are now the white states, won't be white in a very short period of time.
Right.
So we shouldn't fight because we won't have anything left to fight over.
Right.
If we don't cooperate. It's just simply not some very like, oh guys, let's be friends, but it's more like a logical solution, I think.
Right. Right. And, you know, eventually it would be nice if Europe had control of its own destiny, if the United States were not remote controlling things through NATO and the EU, if the different nationalist groups in Europe had power in their countries, who knows, they might be able to sit down and have a conference and rectify certain ethnic tensions between their countries. That would be nice. I think in the long run, that would be the best thing, but I think that in the short run, the most important thing is to think about Europe as a whole, because like it or not, you're sort of yoked together in NATO and the EU. You've got common enemies from the East and the West, and coming in from the global South too now. So I would like to see a lot of the short-term European cooperation, and then maybe some amicable divorces like the Czechs and the Slovaks had years ago. That would be nice. So I hope that develops. It doesn't look like that's happening anytime soon. One of the things that really, unfortunately, polarized the white nationalist world in the United States was the Russia-Ukraine conflict. That was a lot closer to Lithuania. What effect did that have on Lithuanian nationalism?
As I said, we have traditionalists who vote for populist party of private enterprises.
Right.
We have different movements who are basically traditionalist. They are the consist of protest voters, but they are afraid of world nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
And we have pro-Russian nationalists. So even though we're already divided enough, we're divided over this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Some, I can't even call them nationalists, but, well, let's just say pro-Russian nationalists in Lithuania. It's funny.
Right.
It's funny. Because from history, you should know, every Lithuanian should know what comes from Russia.
Right.
So, we were divided by the Ukrainian question. For me, it's question of righteousness. Mm-hmm. Just because my nation got through the same things, well, not directly the same, we didn't have that kind of revolution like they had, unfortunately or fortunately. But we were also influenced by Russia. We fought Russia not once. And throughout the history, definitely many times, our best people were killed by Russia. And it's funny to be nationalist, pro-Russian Lithuania. But still, we got divided. And this is the problem, because nationalists can't be a conformist and say, okay, let's, for example, how would it sound if I would say, okay, let's forget the Ukrainian question, we should be all together so we can run for the parliament. We are going away from our principles.
Right.
Yeah, so we can't do that. So it's a difficult situation. We can't go away from our principles and we can't unite. Because if every traditionalist thinking person in Lithuania would start to be, how to say, ideologically conscious, I think we would definitely would have every third or every fourth person a nationalist.
Okay, that's interesting.
But our society is very conservative still.
Mm-hmm.
But with new generation, there comes new challenges.
Right.
So we have a lot of traditionalist thinking, traditionalist minded people. It just they are not politically conscious, or for some other reason they lost hope that something can be changed, and so on. We have various reasons why a political situation in Lithuania is fucked up. Not only for nationalists, but in general, people, we like lost a lot of people went to work here to Britain,
right,
to Germany, because they can't live on minimum wage and so on, unemployment rate. So this is a difficult political situation in Lithuania. It's not really getting better, as I see.
Okay.
Yeah. And now we're getting those refugees. We can't keep our people in home, so they wouldn't need to travel to other country to make a better living.
Right.
And we are accepting refugees, and the cost of refugees is bigger than the cost of Lithuania, because their costs of integration. Someone will make a big money out of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. It would be a lot cheaper and easier to try and integrate all these Lithuanians who are waiting tables in London back into their own society. It's their own language. It's where they come from.
Yeah.
Than Muslims from the Near East.
Yeah. We didn't integrate Russians and Polish.
Yeah.
So how are we supposed to integrate those barbarians who don't sometimes or very often don't even speak English?
Right. Much less Lithuanian, right?
Yeah.
So you've traveled to Ukraine? Do you have relationships with the Ukrainian nationalists? Can you tell us a bit about your thoughts about the Ukraine Maidan Revolution and the aftermath?
Well, revolution eats its children. There's a saying, you know. So it's good that it happened, I think, because it was a part of the struggle against Russia.
Mm-hmm.
But aftermath, people killed, this war, fallen economy, like, you can go and eat there in a simple fast food restaurant for up to 2 euros.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. But for them, it's expensive.
Right.
It's normal.
Right.
So it's just a simple, I just wanted to show you how it's with simple things like with food.
Right.
Yeah. So I have contacts with Youth Nationalist Congress in Ukraine. Good people. What can I say? Righteous people. We very easily made friends, because we just have the same history, and we understand their struggle.
Yeah, the same basic principles.
Yeah.
Ethno-nationalist principles.
And they are hardcore.
Tell me about that. You obviously admire that. I can see your smile.
Yeah, they are just hardcore. People who I met are, for example, one person, Dimitro, or shortening Dima, he was living in some small town or something. They have a lot of small towns, so I don't remember the name of it. Working as a teacher, he wasn't even expecting that he will go to the Kiev for the Maidan Revolution.
Right.
Yeah, and now he lives in Kiev to work for organization to help volunteers gather all the resources and money the Ukrainian army or voluntary battalions need. So they are hardcore. They like sacrificed a lot. They were literally fighting in that Maidan Revolution. They told me about one guy who was taken during the Maidan Revolution, who was taken into custody of police. Police beat him up and tried to hang over him some charges.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that guy was guilty. They do something like that to nationalists in every country there sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, poor police tries to do that. And you know what we did? Because I can't imagine the same situation happening in Lithuania. About 50 of them, of that organization, came to the police department, to that police building, and said, release him or we're gonna burn. I mean, how cool. They went so far for the comrade. It shows how noble people are. How they care for each other. So I really admire that.
Right.
I really admire that they used, even though it cost a lot, it's very sad, even for me, even though I'm not Ukrainian, but I still admired the fight which they had and which we are having now. Like, there was a pro-Russian president and they just overthrew the government.
Right.
But the problem is that after the overthrow, they had all elections and so on, so nationalists didn't get a lot of votes. So you see, nationalists were very useful during the revolution.
Right.
But after the revolution, oh well, they are still useful, they are fighting, they are gathering resources. But not only nationalists, but nationalists especially.
Yeah.
And I think if this thing with Russia is over, if Ukraine will take back its territories, then nationalism won't be needed in Ukraine.
Right. I totally understand why Ukrainian nationalists are incensed about losing Crimea and the Russian operation in Donbass, right? And it's disgusting in many ways. And what's even what most disgusts me about it are the blatant lies that the pro-Russians tell, which are so insulting to my intelligence. You know, it just makes me angry to hear people who are Western nationalists and share a lot of my principles and know better on so many things, basically quacking out this quasi-Soviet-style pro-Russian duck speak. It's like 1984, and they're barking out these stupid slogans. It's disgusting, and I can't just say, let's all unite together and fight our common enemies, because you look at them and you think, they're weak reeds. There's something wrong with them, that they're so susceptible to this silliness, right? That they're so willing to compromise their principles. And anyway, but I still think that perhaps the pragmatic thing for the Ukrainian nationalists would be to simply say, the Russians took Crimea, fine. We've lost a lot of ethnic Russians. We've lost most of our Tatars. What's left is more Ukrainian than it was before, ethnically. You know, if they just said, you know, we're just going to stop fighting in Donetsk and Luhansk, you know, screw them. Screw them. We're just going to color them gone. What's left would be more Ukrainian. It strikes me that the pragmatic thing to do for Ukrainian nationalists is just to want the Russians to go, right? To want the Russians in the East to be gone and not have any political power in their country. Because, you know, when you have democracy, ethnic minorities have political rights. And that means that they are organized against the interests of the state. And it's a problem. So, you know, a party like Svoboda, which is most powerful in the West, would be more powerful if the East were gone. Do you think that's true? I mean, that's my analysis of the situation. I know why they don't want to do that. They don't want their borders to be changed. But if they were changed, the nationalists would actually benefit from that.
Maybe you have the point, but I don't agree with you, because, like, for what then those guys were fighting and still fighting in those regions? Like, they laid their heads, and now Ukraine just gonna say, oh, fuck it, leave those to yourself, Russia. And
yeah.
It's not right. It's not right, and it's not righteous. Just if a bully comes to you in school and says, give me 10 pounds, or I will fuck you up.
Yeah.
You just give him 10 pounds and leave yourself to yourself 90, because it's because you'll still benefit from it. He won't beat you up. You are giving him only 10 pounds, but it's not righteous. Simply not righteous. Maybe you are right. Maybe this could be the way to deal with it. But but nationalists wouldn't accept it, and I would of Ukraine, and I would totally agree with them.
Yeah.
From what I think, what would be the best solution, simply, is to try to evacuate as much people from that region as possible. Take a refugees and say that to people, somehow to say to those people who are living in those occupied regions, if you stay here, you are dead, you will die.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ukrainians should do, make an airstrike and bomb all the separatists. Just bomb all the area, even though everything will be destroyed, but they will be the winning side.
Right. Okay.
Just. I met one person from Donetsk. She somehow managed to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's maybe possible even to another. And I think that maybe there's a possibility that some separatists aren't letting people to go away. Maybe.
Right.
I think there is the possibility. But there are also a lot of Slavic Mongols who say, yeah, Novorossiya.
Yeah.
So we should just bomb them.
Right.
Simply because I don't look... I'm not saying I don't like Russians. My friend in Lithuania is, best friend in Lithuania is Russia. But I don't like those who are pro-Kremlin or pro-Putin. So I think there just should be, like most furious cultural Marxists, so most furious pro-Russians, they should get all killed, just simply. I don't regret saying these words.
Right. Well, there are two ways of dealing with ethnic tensions. One is you move borders, and the other is you move people. It strikes me that Russia, which has a terrible demographic problem, could solve a lot of its demographic problems if Mother Russia just gathered home her Russian minorities in the Baltic and Ukraine and Belarus and Kazakhstan. They don't want to do that, though, because the presence of those people there gives Putin a fifth column and also a pretext for intervening in those countries.
Yeah, to defend Russian-speaking rights.
yeah.
Like they did in Ukraine.
Yeah. So I do think that that's very problematic. And, my hope is that these countries in the Baltic area, the Baltic states and Eastern Europe, can maintain their independence from both the U.S. and the Russians. So we'll see how that happens. So what do you plan for your career as a nationalist? You're 22. You've got your whole life ahead of you. Do you want to be a politician? Are you going to be an organizer? What are you going to do?
It's a difficult question to ask because... it's not difficult. It's just I can't give you a simple answer.
Right.
Because... I'm not like most of the people who plan their career. I'm gonna when I finish school, I'm gonna finish university. When I finish university, I will try to get that job precisely. Where the life leads me and where will I want to go, I will just go there. What it means to be a politician? I will, even though it's difficult, I would want to remain a nationalist, but be in a parliament or somewhere similar. But remain a nationalist and don't make compromises. I don't want to say what public wants to hear. I want to say what I want to say, what I want public to hear.
Right.
Yeah, so, even sometimes uncomfortable truths or uncomfortable thoughts which a lot of people are having. For example, we are Lithuanian people, we weren't brought to Lithuania. We are rightful owners of its land. We have a right to say that we're racist, that we don't like niggers or kebabs. We have a right.
Yeah.
We don't have a right to go to Africa and say that, oh, you are all disgusting niggers and blah, 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 that kind of shit. But we have a right to have an own, even unargumented opinion that we just don't like or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, and political correctness doesn't let us do that, because you're, if you say you're a racist, then you're like, it's difficult, more difficult to get for you to get a job and so on. So, well, depends on what kind of job you want. If you want to be a working class, then you can do whatever you want. If you want to struggle for something more, you need to keep your mouth shut sometimes or every time.
Right.
Yeah. So, my plans are to endure me being as a chairman of youth organization, because it's difficult. I have 1.5 years left. Then I will see, do I want to run for the next, for more 2 years, or I don't want. The elections of 2016 will change a lot in Lithuania.
Mm-hmm.
It, we all again have a chance. I don't know how we will use it to show ourselves, to get elected to the parliament. When I say us, I mean Nationalist Movement, Nationalist Party. So that will, my future will depend on that. Maybe I'll just become too misanthropic and go live to the wilderness like Varg Vikernes.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
because I'm a city person. I like living in a city. I like being in a city center, at least in Lithuania, when we don't have so much minorities.
Right, right.
Of non-white race. So I like Lithuania. But if I would get too tired and too misanthropic of a politically totally illiterate society, then I would love to go just live somewhere in the wilderness and enjoy peace, maybe for some time. But I'm optimistic that everything will turn out good for nationalism and for me. So doesn't matter who I will be in the future. What it matters, what kind of future it will be.
Right.
I can be an organizer. I can be an, if I am elected, nationalist in the parliament. I can just be a chairman of some nationalist organization. It doesn't matter. It matters where my children are gonna live. Are we gonna live in a white country or not?
Right.
So, that's the question. Because I can adapt. I'm not, I'm a humanitarian. I'm not into IT or sciences like physics. So, but I can adapt. I can be a lot of, but that doesn't matter.
Right.
It just matters to have what matters for me is nationalism to strive, and just to have enough money to for myself and for family if I will have one.
Right. Well, this has been a really interesting conversation. I appreciate you taking the time out. I enjoyed your speech yesterday at the London Forum. And I look forward to having other conversations. I'm going to be visiting the Baltic countries next year. So I hope I'll be there with your Independence Day celebration or holding a torch. And I hope you remember me when you're Prime Minister.
I hope I will be Prime Minister.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, too.